This is a test. This station is conducting a test of the emergency broadcasting system. This is only a test.
Of all these opinions, this is the one that continues to blindside me, dumbfound me, gobsmack me, thunderstrike
me. Just blasphemy. Absolute blasphemy.
Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
This is the Overreaction Podcast. I am Chase. With me, as always, my man Cody. And we have a great episode in store for you today, diving into the 2024 rookie class, even looking at some historics here. There's been a lot of questions lately about, you know, Marv or Caleb at the 101. Can I take Malik Nabers over some of these quarterbacks? What about Romo Dunze? What are my options here? Kind of looking at some of the historics of quarterback data and wide receiver data and how this might be changing some startup strategies as well. But before we do, have some super big news of Josh Dobbs signing to San Francisco, Rico Dowdle signing back in Dallas, Alexander Mattison going to the Las Vegas Raiders, KJ Osborne being the wide receiver 1, 2, 3, or 4 for the New England Patriots, and Snoop Huntley signing to be the backup quarterback in Cleveland. Anything interest you there?
That's the things that have happened in the last 24 hours since you last heard of DD being on the airwaves, and we're not going to talk any free agency anymore. We're done doing free agency recaps. You hear them everywhere. Somebody will probably do another show on the last signings of the week. We're not going to do it anymore. We're going to leave that to some other people. It's everywhere in the space. We don't need to do that here. Time to turn the corner, turn the page towards looking at the draft and actually talk some theory here. But before we do, we got anything to plug? I think there's actually a pretty big thing going along with that draft.
Obviously, with the NFL draft stream coming up for Destination Devi, make sure you are tapped into the YouTube. But you also should make sure you are tapped into Underdog Fantasy. So for our first time users, if you do have up to a $100 deposit match on your first deposit, if you use promo code TFDR at sign up. So make sure you do. Download the app, sign up your mom, sign up your cousin, your sister, I don't care who. But get yourself on Underdog and make sure you use promo code TFDR at sign up for that up to a $100 deposit match on your first deposit. What else we got going on here? We got to pump the draft stream, man. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited for that.
That's the other thing we can also do. We got to pump the draft stream as well. There's a bunch of prizes that are going to be given out, a bunch of giveouts during the entire night. We're going to be on there. I don't know about you. I already took off Friday of the draft so that I can stay up all of Thursday night. So I'm going to be on there probably at least every single day in some aspect. I don't know how much it's going to be, but it's probably going to be way too much. Draft stream is absolutely a full-on spectacular. If you even look back at what we did for the combine, those numbers are going to be absolutely insane. It's going to be a party. We are going to be the number one fantasy football show doing a draft stream for 2024. Going to be an absolutely sick time.
Dude, signed cards, signed jerseys. We got a bunch of giveaways for roster reviews, Heisman memberships, things like that as well. So definitely tap into the Destination Devi draft stream. It's going to be an absolute blast. On that same note, make sure you are part of the Patreon, patreon.com/allgas. Make sure you are in that Heisman tier or the Destination 5 tier where you will have access to all of the content creators all day, every day. Answering questions, having conversations similar to what we're having today. Kind of diving into some of the data and just kind of bouncing things off of not only the content creators, but the community as well. This is where you get to engage, ask your questions, bring up some theory, bring up strategies, and really, challenge things. Iron sharpens iron is a big thing that, Dynasty Barry used to say all the time. That was a big thing that he used to say. And it's true. You have to challenge each other. If everyone's sitting there thinking the exact same things, maybe we're missing. There's a blind spot. So make sure you are in that Heisman tier, Destination Devi, patreon.com/allgas.
And that's exactly what this entire episode is going to be over, is from that conversation that we've been having over the past week. Other people have been having it in the Discord as well. You and me more towards the later nights of the evening, since we can't really hop on that voice chat during work. But I've been listening to other people talk about it. Everybody is on this kind of conversation right now within that Discord of what do we do with these picks and where does the security of this class lie? Where do you want to place your picks if you have that highly coveted top 6 pick right now? Do you use it on the quarterback? Do you use it on Caleb? Is Caleb the one? Is Marvin Harrison the one? Would you actually push some of the wide receivers up over the quarterbacks because it's more secure asset in a Malik Nabers or Romo Dunze instead of drafting one of the other two highly valued quarterbacks of a Malik, of not a Malik Nabers, of a Jaden Daniels or a one of
Drake
the other
May, JJ McCarthy, any of them.
Exactly. And so that's what this entire thing has been fully formulated on. And I feel like I've been kind of out on an island on this one, and I've been arguing more for what we've been arguing in the past. And I don't even know if I was on that in the past, but I'm on it this year, which is I value the quarterbacks a little bit more still because they present a little bit more volatility. Yes, it's a little bit more negative, but they also provide the volatility to really increase in value. And so what we did, or what I did before we jumped on the stream here, is we went back through the last 4 years worth of data from ADP of Superflex rookie drafts. And we gathered all of the quarterbacks and wide receivers, and we did all of their KTC values, not their overall ranking in terms of where they were within their own individual position, but their actual value that's attached to them. Pulled all of those from where they started at after they were drafted, where they finished year one. So about March 1st is the second value that I pulled. And then this after their second year where they finished on that March 1st date again. And we can look and see over the past 4 years where all of these quarterbacks and wide receivers have either gained or increased in value from year one to year two and from their time at the draft position to the end of year one.
So as mentioned, the opening value is going to have team assigned. This is after the NFL draft, so we know where the landing spot is. There's no mystery. Like, so JSN's number is a little bit lower than people probably anticipate because we know he is the number three in Seattle. Whether people believe it or not was a different story. So his KTC value reflects that. But again, closing value year one is in March 1. Closing value year two is going to be March 1 of the following year. So this way you have two full years of data. So yeah, no, I appreciate, you know, kind of giving those caveats here because it is important to kind of note where their value starts, ends, and how it changes throughout, because there are some very polarizing names in this data set. So where do you want to start with this?
I actually just want to break down the full-on data. We'll see if we can post this one somewhere along with it to where if you want to see the data, you can look through it. But just for the audio listeners right here, if you can't get to the data, I think we just got to start it off by going through everything. So let's go through the 2020 class first. You've got Burrow, Tua, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Herbert, and Justin Jefferson, all in order. And then all of those guys are going to have a year one increase or a year two decrease. 2021, the names inside the data set, Trevor Lawrence, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Ja'Marr Chase, Zach Wilson, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle. 2022, quarterbacks and wide receivers in the first round of Superflex rookie drafts was Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, Jameson Williams, Chris Olave, Kenny Pickett, Sky Moore, Christian Watson, 2023, Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, JSN, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, Zay Flowers. And then obviously we're going to have our top six that we're really going to be focusing in on here. You already know their names, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze is the guys that we are trying to match to that data set that we just ran through.
All right, love it. So it's good to kind of know the names. We all know the names. We drafted all of these players over the last few years. And if you've been playing Dynasty since 2020, you've seen all of this. And so do you want to get into the range of the opening values? Should I go through like some of the ranges here as far as like the high and low opening values? Because I do think it's important to kind of note, while every one of these players was a first round rookie pick, and most likely all of them, maybe there's a couple second rounders, but most of them all first round NFL picks as well. Each year, the values for that class change, given whether the strength of that class, if we believed we had a Ja'Marr Chase and a Joe Burrow or a T-Law when he came in, like those types of names had extremely high value. Should I go through the high and the low of each one so we kind of have a range of value for each class?
Let's go with the quarterback one and the wide receiver one high end value. I think that's really where you can get the kind of perspective of where these guys started out at.
So we'll go to 2020. Joe Burrow started out, he was the high at 7,800 value. And that was, what was that, quarterback 12 at the time, I believe. And so he's going to be your high coming into the league. And then we had the high of CeeDee Lamb at a 66.75, which places him in like that kind of that flat range of wide receiver, 12 to 24 range.
Yeah, we can look at those guys. I still don't know if the wide receiver ranking exactly matters. I think this is more just like how far in that value do you drop? And I guess we can also caveat before we get into the second part of this and the other years. I understand it's KTC value. KTC value has that artificial dynasty value, that ADV that we talk about baked into it. But it's probably one of the best things that we still have to gauge that community consensus. And it does a very good job of actually illustrating how much you actually rose or how much you actually fell just within the overall dynasty consensus of the community. And so you can have your issues with KTC. I certainly do as well. But for this exercise, I think it's actually a pretty good range. You can also then we'll go into 2021. We got Trevor Lawrence leading the class at 81.69 at the quarterback position. And that is actually the highest we will ever see a quarterback come in over the last 4 years as a rookie starting off, followed up with Jamar Chase at 69.94 at the wide receiver position. And it's a good bit behind where we're going to bring in Marvin Harrison Jr. at 76.46. 2022 was a pretty low class. I think we can all understand that. Drake London only coming in with 46.87 to top off the class. And then Kenny Pickett, obviously a back end of the first round quarterback, isn't going to have much capital going into him either. 44.50 to be the quarterback one of the 2022 class. Anthony Richardson was 61.73 at the top. JSN, like you mentioned, this is post the actual NFL draft, so he did fall a little bit more than what we had going into that night, and he fell down to 53.64, but still led the class.
Yeah, so I think the big thing to note here is a lot of the quarterback values as we go through this are going to start off a bit higher than wide receivers. As you kind of heard, there's a significant gap between quarterback one and wide receiver one of the class, even though a lot of times we were taking these players back-to-back in rookie drafts, or even we're taking, you know, Jamar Chase above a lot of the quarterbacks. I mean, I saw Chase go 101 overall several times, and so, or you know, it just depended on the team and things like that. So I do think that there's some caveats here with value, team need, stuff like that, that has to be taken into play. And a lot of what we're going to get into is team context as well as league context. If you have an active league, being able to have different pivots and things like that with your players, with your valuable players, are more likely to be available to you when you have trade partners constantly. But if you don't have those trade partners, you don't have an active league, you may want to just take what is more of a team fit for your build, because you're not going to find a trade partner. So as we get into some of that, just some context for league settings as well.
Yep. But now we've gone through all the names, we've gone through all the starting values, and we can actually get into the results of the data. So I think this is where we can really start to dive in, hammer into what the actual outputs of this exercise were. And we'll start it off by looking at the quarterbacks first. And what I want to do is look at over the past four draft seasons, where that quarterback started off, where their entry value was right after the draft, to where they were about that March 1st date after their first full NFL season, and how much you either increased or decreased in value. And the average of all 11 quarterbacks who were in that data set increased in average by 213. Okay. Now, it's not that much whenever you're talking about guys that are you're coming in at like 5,000 to 6,000 typically for a lot of these guys. But the variance on either side of that is really where you're going to see what a lot of people have about the concern of quarterback right now. Because the max decrease in value was actually Trevor Lawrence in that year with Urban Meyer, where everything was god-awful. And because he came in so high, he had a lot more room to fall. So the max decrease over that sample set was a decrease in 2,363 points.
Okay.
On the flip side, though, you also have two guys that absolutely skyrocketed in value, and that's Justin Herbert and CJ Stroud. Justin Herbert being the one who rose, or actually, no, it was CJ Stroud this last year. Highest riser of all of that sample size, rose by 4,340 points of KTC.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, obviously, we all know he vaulted himself into KTC quarterback 2-3 range at a point here, which was an astronomical rise, because now people are still assuming, again, there's built-in ADV with that as well for Stroud, where people assume he's going to continue to get better from that. Same thing that happened with Herbert, his massive rise. People assumed he was going to continue to just keep getting better. So good to know here. We're just going to kind of run through some of the other risers, because I do think it's important to note just some other names, because I do want to get into context here as well, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
So, all right. So year one, we're just going to be looking at year one. Some of the other big risers. I mean, Joe Burrow went up 213 points. Obviously, he tore his ACL. Year one did show, you know, have a good showing the first half of the year that he was there. So this is just the 2020 class. The other risers here in 2021 are going to be Trey Lance. Trey Lance did actually rise from at the end from his the time he was drafted to the end of year one, because if you recall, that's when everyone was like, oh, this is the Trey Lance time. This is before we knew anything else. March 1 was still an open book of like, oh, this is going to be Trey Lance's team. So then you get down. We had no risers in 2022 because we just had Kenny Pickett.
Who no really surprise stayed there. Flat. He only dropped by 36 points, which is nothing in KTC value.
Right. So he basically stayed the exact same. Then getting into 2023. So obviously this last year's class, we had A-Rich, Bryce, and Stroud. Mentioned Stroud already. A-Rich did get injured as well, but he showed enough on the field for people to get a nice boost all the way to 74-82, which is putting him in the top 12 quarterbacks as well. And he is he rose 1,300. And the losers of all this, Bryce Young obviously dropped from 58-12. All the way down to 45-55. Numbers don't really matter here. Did drop basically down into like that QB 18 to 20 range. Other significant droppers of over 1,000 points or over like, you know, 8 to 10 spots. Zach Wilson dropped 1,800. Justin Fields took a little bit of a dip. He was high enough up there. He only dropped down to 57-54, staying in the, you know, 12 to 15 range. But he did drop 1,100. T-Law, as you mentioned, dropped 2,300, but he was so high coming in, it still kept him in the top 12. More of a reality check for people than anything, because people were so high on T-Law coming in. And then the last faller was Tua. Tua was, you know, in the 2020 class, just obviously he had injuries. He had the Fitzmagic stuff going on. That team itself wasn't in a great spot, but he did drop 1,500 spot points, which dropped him probably, I think it was like 10 to 12 spots in KTC, all the way down to 55-68. So it was a bit of a dip there for him into year one.
Right. And then so if you look at all those quarterbacks that we've now talked about, all 11 quarterbacks, we do now have five total quarterbacks who rose in value from their time that they were drafted to the end of year one, and six out of the 11 quarterbacks actually decreased in value. Now, typically, your swing is going to be pretty massive, right? You're probably moving around about 1,000 points if you do go one way or the other, or at least 500. Two of the ones that we said staying similar, Joe Burrow with the torn ACL, and then Kenny Pickett doing about what Kenny Pickett was expected to do, right? So, but you are going to have a lot of variance within that quarterback position from your draft time to where just in terms of what you put on the field year one, even if you aren't playing that much, you still have a pretty large swing in terms of value within the dynasty market.
Yeah, I think the thing to note here, just taking names out of this as well, like a lot of these players that did drop, I mean, you're talking Zach Wilson, 4,800, which puts him in, what would that be here? QB 24 range. So it's like 23 range even. So even the most significant droppers were more likely the names that if you think about them, you knew that they had questionable profiles coming in. Maybe they were vaulted up for some, again, talk about artificial dynasty value, some artificial reasons. We see Zach Wilson throwing in underwear, running around like Patrick Mahomes with no defenders out there. And people are like, that's the next Patrick Mahomes. I can see it. It's like, yeah, it's all cool with backyard football. But again, you see those types of situations. Again, the Tua injury definitely played a significant role. Trey Lance did get a bump, but Justin Fields took a drop. We saw how he played year one, and it wasn't, I guess, very good as we now see him on the bench. So some of these fallers you can kind of see. Bryce Young was on an awful team, awful situation. the results spoke for themselves, and he obviously played at a historically bad level too. So some of these fallers, you can kind of see the reasons why that happened, but still relatively stable outside of a couple. Anything else to note here from the year one risers or fallers?
No, it's just going to, like, with how reactionary we are, and this is why the sample size is a little bit smaller to only put in these last four or so years. We need to look at what the changing dynamics of what this market has been, and that we are playing in more of a day-to-day, week-to-week game whenever we're talking about Dynasty Fantasy Football. It's not exactly the same way where you have this insulated value just because of your production profile in college anymore. And so you do see sometimes a large swing in value just because of this first year. Let's move off of the first year now, and let's now go to year one to year two, because this is where I actually really think the data even gets more interesting for all these guys. Now, obviously, we don't have data on the last class, so we don't have any data about what they would end up for year two on of CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, or Bryce Young, but we do still have data for another eight quarterbacks there, and we'll just get straight to the overall outputs of this. On average, from year one to year two, quarterbacks dropped 668 points of KTC value. Only three of the eight quarterbacks actually increased in value, five of them decreasing in value. And the max decrease, I believe, here was that Zach Wilson one, absolutely tanking, bottoming out 2,767 points of drop. And then the max increase here was Trevor Lawrence rebounding from such a bad year one season to rebound all the way back with almost 2,000 points of increase.
Yes, and so I'm glad you mentioned that. I think the big thing that we're noticing with the decreases and increases here, like, that's kind of the last straw for people. You know, year two, we saw a 1,000-point drop for Tua, 2,000-point drop for Lance, 2,000-plus for Zach Wilson, 2,000-point drop for Pickett. Like, the bottoms fell out. The increase, like, Fields dropped a tiny bit, 300, but the increases, Herbert went up a little bit, but he already had an astronomical rise. Burrow was already up there. Small slight increase. So while they did increase, it wasn't like major, but the bottoms fell out of these quarterbacks year two. And that, you know, if you weren't good enough to cut it, that's a scary sign, especially when you had a lot of these guys had significant drops or minor increases after year one.
And as we were mentioning about Trevor Lawrence being the one who really did rebound, you can actually look to the other four quarterbacks who dropped in year one. All of them outside of Trevor Lawrence, who dropped in value year one, fell again in year two. Yep. So if you really don't put together that first season, that's where you can probably say, even if you want to ride it into a little bit of the season with these guys, that's the falling knife that you don't want to be left under whenever it falls out, because the bottom falling out is just it's an absolutely brutal point. And so that's the really big takeaway for me here is, if you don't perform year one, you better be really quick to either move on at that point, because you still hold some decent value. You're typically still in that like 4,000 range. You can move around a little bit within those quarterback tiers. You mentioned Bryce Young still being quarterback 18, quarterback 20. You can make the bet if you want to go back in on him, but I would probably rather be moving on and getting out from the falling knife, where we see here four of five fallers from year one fall again in year two, and even in a more drastic and impactful way.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing to note here as well. When you see these drops, again, you can make an excuse for why Tua dropped, but you can make an excuse for some of these situations. And I think that's the big thing, is like we want to write off, or we want to justify why something happened because we believed in the talent. We're not talking about running backs today, but I did this with J.K. Dobbins because I was a big believer in J.K. Dobbins. And you know, obviously injury played into that, but it was one of those things where it's like I wrote off a scenario where I'm like, okay, J.K. Dobbins is going to be back to where he was before. He's going to be that same prospect coming out of Ohio State, and he's just going to come out and light the league up. Reality check. There's a point where you just need to cut your losses. You just need to take what you can get and run. And I just am curious because, you know, quarterbacks – you and I, and this will, we'll kind of get into this a little bit later, but the way we dynasty, if we are drafting a rookie quarterback, that team is probably not in great shape. So we're probably drafting that for a different outcome. But for the most part, if we're looking for quarterback help and we have a pick that's in play, you know, thinking top four for this year, just tying it back to this year's class with Caleb, Marv, Jaden, and Drake, like, we want to get out of those picks so that we can go find a proven talent, not have this question mark of a situation, this question mark of even the talent. Like maybe it just doesn't pan out. Maybe it just doesn't translate to the NFL. And unfortunately, that's the way it is for some of these guys. We don't want to take that risk. But if you have a rookie on your roster, you have some of these guys after year one, are you at that point where if you see that drop in value, you're just willing to cut losses? I mean, obviously, T-Law was a quote-unquote generational prospect, so people justified it. You had Urban Meyer, big-time scenario around his significant drop. But everyone else, are you down to just move at this point?
If I've held through all the way through to this point and it looks like that another drop is going to be there, I'm not even going to try to start selling myself the story of how this could really turn around. What you do there is then you save yourself, right? Like then I'll try to use that quarterback to pivot off to just a little bit of security that can at least provide some stability to the team. What I don't want to do is absolutely just lean into it again. And what I'd really like to do to counteract that as well is let's go to some different teams. If I want to actually buy some quarterbacks, then maybe that's where I actually go out and buy at the low point. Because the issue that you have here is that sunk cost fallacy, right? The issue that you have, why you're still holding these guys is because you did invest a 101, 103, 105 quarterback draft pick, a rookie draft pick, and it's so much of your team that you almost feel like you have to hold on and you can't get out for what you have. I'd rather take the other teams and go try to buy on the potential low at that price where it's not as impactful to me anymore.
Yep. I do like that. So anything else you want to note on these quarterbacks? Because I mean, is there anything you want to tie here to the 2024 class, or you want to get into two wide receivers? Because I do feel like, you know, we know where these KTC values are for like Caleb being at 75, 78, like he's the second highest quarterback behind Trevor Lawrence, or sorry, third highest quarterback behind Lawrence, Burrow, and then Caleb. But then you have the highest wide receiver we have ever seen coming into the league in Marvin Harrison Jr.
By a wide margin. I think it's like 700 points of KTC value that Marvin Harrison is coming over any wide receiver, at least within this data set. And maybe it's not over the history of, you know, like 10 years, but we don't really have KTC data that goes back that far anyway. So I know Scott's done it as well, of where they're coming in terms of their ranking, I believe. And so that is definitely the highest that we have ever seen come into the league. And so we'll get into the wide receivers here, because I do think we need to see both sets of data to really start to compare the two of which route you really want to go. So we'll go into, and I'll just get to the output of the data really here, yeah. And we'll just jump straight into that. So we've got our 15 wide receivers that are in the data set from 2020 to 2023. Read through all of their names before. If you need to go back, listen to it again, we can go back, listen to it again. But we're going to say our 15 wide receivers from the time that they were drafted, their KTZ value at that point, to the end of year one, that March 1st date, the average rise from that point was 340 points of KTC data.
So comparison to the quarterbacks, again, it was 213 to that 340. So a little bit more of a significant rise. I'm sure you can picture some names here and imagine why. But yes, a little bit bigger rise. So when we look at the risers, obviously, let's go to 2020 class. You had Justin Jefferson, who was, people were still a little bit down on him. He was drafted at the back of the first round in a lot of drafts. Sometimes you got him in the second even. But he took a significant rise of 3,000-plus points in KTC value, vaulting him up to 8,100. The other big riser in that class was CeeDee Lamb. I mean, I wouldn't say big riser. Riser in that class was CeeDee Lamb. He did go up 700 points as well. 2021, Ja'Marr Chase, obviously the big name. He came in relatively high, and he solidified that by jumping up 2,000 points again, jumping into the 8,900 range. Outside of that, it was just Jaylen Waddle. Smitty actually took a dip that year. And then Judy took a dip in 2020 as well. So you had those guys as the dippers for those 2020 and 2021 classes. Getting into 2022, everyone had more of a realistic kind of KTC value coming in, all in that 4,500 to 4,900 range. So they all went like 600 increase for London, 1,000 for Garrett Wilson, And then you had 1,000 for Chris Olave. The other droppers, obviously, Treylon Burks was about 500 points. J-Mo didn't do anything. He dropped 73 points. So no true big winners or losers at the top part of that draft. But at the bottom, you had the Sky fall out of Sky Moore, and he dropped by 1,300 points. And then you had Christian Watson with a slight increase of 692. So we had some up and down there, nothing too crazy, no Jamar Chases, no Justin Jeffersons, but some solidified value when it came to Garrett Wilson and Drake London, and then a nice little bump for Chris Olave as well. And then looking at 2023 class, JSN, Addison, QJ, and Flowers. We know the other big name risers that were not in the first round, but those ones here, they all, I guess Addison went up 700, Flowers went up 900, QJ, the bottom fell out of, but no one believed in him in the first place. Maybe that changes with a new scenery there. And then JSN, just a slight drop of 128 points. So that's kind of the rounded out data. A lot of stability is what it seems like. There's really no bottoms falling out of anybody other than Sky Moore, QJ, and I mean, I guess Judy a little bit. He dropped 1,000, but people still believed in Jerry Judy after year one.
Right. And actually, as we're looking at this 340 average for these wide receivers, these 15 data set, if you were to remove that Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, the two best wide receivers in the league, the actual change in average that changes is like 40 points. Yeah. Literally, in terms of if you group the other 13 wide receivers, it's basically flatline for these guys. So what it does do for you is provide a lot of that stability that a lot of people are potentially looking for. And so I can definitely understand why that is really attractive whenever you're looking at whether you would pick a quarterback or a wide receiver. Overall numbers, you've got 10 of the wide receivers who increased in value, 7 who ended up decreasing in value. That max increase was Justin Jefferson coming from the back of the first round all the way up 3,169 points. And the max decrease was that Sky Moore, who the bottom fell out, or QJ, I'm sorry, who the bottom fell out on this year, down 1,636.
So that's just year one. We'll just go through year two again real quick here, because I do think the overall summary, we just want to kind of read the data off. I know it's probably not the most fun to listen to, but I promise you there's a reason for it. So year two, going back to 2020 class, you had a decrease for Jerry Judy of 413. You actually had a 1,200-point decrease for CeeDee Lamb. Big drop there in year two. Jefferson, slight increase. Doesn't matter. He's at the top of his game, so he had an 180-point there. Jamar Chase had a drop year two of 800 points. Smitty stayed pretty stabilized, increase of 300. Waddle, increase of 140. London, year two increase of 670. Garrett Wilson, increase of about 500, and then Olave, an increase of 333. Bottoms fell out of year two. Treylon Burks, J-Mo, and then an even bigger drop for Sky Moore, another 1,300. So all of those were 1,200-plus point drops. And then Christian Watson had a 950-point drop, so another significant drop for him because he could not stay healthy. Obviously, for last year's class, we don't have any data for year two, but you can kind of do the math here on how some of this is working. So any key takeaways from the year one to year two drops for you?
Biggest thing here is that average drop. You're going to see that if you did drop early, or even if you just didn't live up to expectations in year two, you're going to drop a lot more. So we see a lot more fallers within this data set. And out of the total 13 that we now have left in the data set, an average of negative 446 points of KTC value. Only 6 of the 13 wide receivers increased in value, 7 then decreasing. The max increase was only 678, but the max decrease was 1860. Out of those ones that dropped in year one, 7 wide receivers fell in value, and 4 of them, the knife kept falling, and they fell even further in value.
So the big thing that we're looking at here, just going back to averages here, so let's just sum up everything we've looked at. Quarterbacks, again, increases from when they were drafted to year one was 213 points as far as the increases go. Then the decrease was going to be 668 in year, or I guess for year two. The averages. So basically quarterbacks year one, you have an increase. Year two, decrease of 668. Wide receivers year one, average increase of 340. It does drop if you take out the Chase and Jeffersons of the group, but they happened. We can't totally disregard it. But again, still an increase year one, but a more stabilized year two of 446 drop. Bottom line is people believe 1 year is kind of what I'm getting at this. You know, you have a 1 year window to truly, you know, worst case scenario, get out 80 cents on the dollar, 85 cents on the dollar for either of these positions. But exactly. The volatility is a little bit, there's a little bit more volatility with the quarterback than there is with wide receiver. People seem to have more stabilized value with that wide receiver group.
Fully correct. And it's because the quarterbacks have traditionally just started out at such a higher value. Those ones that do drop, like that Trevor Lawrence, you can see the fall come down so far. And that's what I'm interested to kind of see with these wide receivers. Obviously, they're great prospects coming out in 2024. But if one of them doesn't live up to the hype because they're already being vaulted up to a Marvin Harrison value of 7646, Neighbors and Odunze, I believe, will even get above 6,000 by the time that we're at the draft or we're at post-draft time, whenever all these other values were taken. They have a lot further to fall and not as high to climb. And so you're kind of drafting them a little bit more at the ceiling. But I do get the fact that they are stabilized because you have that year. It's going to be a little bit harder for them to fall down. This is where my hesitation comes in and where I'll play a little bit more to the high variance side of this. And I would actually rather still play to the quarterbacks here, especially if I'm on one of those teams that isn't in that win now competing window. And I need one of these picks to really turn around my roster. I'm not really looking for stability. I'm not really looking to just be able to get out if I need to. I'd rather take the big upside swing and see if I can hit on the next Justin Herbert, hit on the next CJ Stroud, because the change in value to my roster, whenever that's 4,340 KTC points, which you can equate to like two firsts almost worth of value, that's just so much more massive than I think that you have with the potential climb of what these wide receivers bring.
Yeah, I'm looking through some of this now. I think the thing that I'm kind of looking at is when you have these quarterbacks coming in at top 12 values, top 15 values even, like everyone that came in with a top 12 value dropped. And right. Like looking at Burrow went up slightly. He did go up slightly. But Tua dropped. You had T-Law drop. You had Fields drop, Zach Wilson drop. I mean, all of these guys that were already valued as top 12 to 15 quarterbacks coming in dropped. A-Rich would be about the exception. A-Rich and Burrow are the only two exceptions. Bryce Young dropped. Obviously, Stroud wasn't in that range when he initially came in because his S2 score, whatever excuse you want to give, he wasn't in that group. So he did have a significant increase. But if they're already being valued as a top 12 to 15 quarterback, why not go get a top 12 to 15 quarterback? So I am genuinely curious what your thoughts are when it comes to this now, because I think this goes into a bigger question on how you play Dynasty, how you use these values, how you see these players as they come into the league. And obviously we all love young talent. We want the next Puka. We want the next Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or CJ Stroud. We want them on our team. But the risk that you have to take to hit on that, what situations are you willing to take the gamble on that massive upside? That's kind of what I want to get to. Where are you willing to take that gamble on the upside, and why would you take one of these positions over the other to try and hit that?
And this is where it gets away from a little bit of our typical strategy that we like to preach here on Overreaction Pod, TFDR, wherever you listen to us at. We typically like to go more win now. And if I'm in the win now and I somehow luck into one of these picks, I'll just go for the stability again. I'll go back to the wide receiver. That's where I know what I'm getting in that asset. And I already know that my team is at the top of the ranks in that class. That's perfectly fine. I'll sit with the stability and I will sit with the thing that I can potentially re-roll into another elite wide receiver who's producing almost immediately and during the season. But if I'm on the total rebuild roster, or if I'm on that slightly middling team, why would I not play on the high variance side of things? that can turn my roster around. And if it doesn't happen, you know where I'm going to be again? Right in line to make another pick. It's very hard, I think, to, unless you just do go into that full burn it to the ground and you're making five picks in the first five, and then this isn't a problem because you can take them all. But if you only have the one or two picks, I think that I'm still going to lean in a quarterback because they have such a higher volatility, whether positive or negative. The positive side is I do find myself into a top 12 quarterback, and I have this value that I can then go trade that's worth so much more than what I put into it originally. Or I can then get out if the quarterback doesn't work, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. I can still get out and probably pivot to just another vet quarterback that's still producing. And I know that you can just, if that's the wide receiver instead, well, then I can just re-roll for next year. I can throw it back in for another 108 pick. I can throw it back in for another 106 pick. But I think I'd still rather try to hit on the what I believe is the more highly volatile upside play when I'm in that position of a team in a rebuild.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. Like I get the volatility, right? Like I get the high variance upside play when it comes to quarterback. Because if they hit, you find yourself a Stroud, you find yourself a Herbert, you get some of these guys that absolutely smash and increase their value, you're able to turn your team around a lot quicker, especially if you're a rebuilding team, right? Like you can split that into multiple assets. You have a lot more value to move around. And again, if you swing and miss, you're right back there in it. So I do appreciate the high upside. So I do think it's a team situation. But the one thing I'm curious of when it comes to the wide receiver side, because it seems like this is a wide receiver driven game at this point. Like obviously we love quarterbacks and super flex, but wide receiver right now is the dominant position. And we draft a lot of old heads. You know, there's a lot of high producing old players out there, and there's some fun data behind that. But we're all here trying to hit on these wide receivers. And obviously we're looking at just the first round data, right? Because if you swing and miss with your first round pick, it hurts a lot more than swinging and missing with your second or third or fourth. And yeah, we all want to find Puka and Tank Dell, and we all want to find the next, you know, late round player that suddenly pops and just, oh man, you went from a fourth round pick or a free agent to top six in Dynasty. Congrats, Puka. We all want those players. But the reality is if you swing and miss in your first round, you're doing a lot more detriment to your team than anything. So with the way the game is changing, with the aging out of some of these elite players, and if you want to get into some of that data, we can. Why wouldn't you be willing to take the risk on the wide receiver? Because I feel like we're in a range now, or we're about to hit an age this year and next year, where some of these wide receivers coming into the league are going to be the ones replacing the current elite, as we would like to call them. So talk to me about that a little bit.
So I won't address it from the elite side. I think we'll save that one potentially for next week, but I'll address it from this way. How many locked in wide receiver ones year over year do you think we have in the league right now? I'll just go on KTC, go down the list, and you can stop me whenever I get there. Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Puka Nacua, Garrett Wilson, AJ Brown, Drake London, Chris Olave.
Stop.
I stop that. I stop the truly elite wide receivers at Amon-Ra St. Brown. We have four. I'm not putting Puka there yet. I can't. AJ Brown slipping a little bit as well, potentially, with that entire Philadelphia Eagles offense. Four locked in wide receivers that I think are yearly top 12 able body wide receivers right now. And that's where I think the game's changing.
And I'm with you there. And I think that's exactly kind of the point, is because like you have four, I would say Puka. I'm okay with Puka. I'm okay with AJ Brown. Garrett Wilson scares me. I mean, just situation. Drake London, I love, but again, Chris, you know, Olave, all these guys, whatever. It's when you get into the older guys where I'm like, okay, they can have wide receiver one seasons, but if you're talking about truly elite dynasty assets, yes, I think it's four.
I will project for 3 years, have the potential 3 years straight, have the potential to be a top 12 wide receiver.
And that is exactly why I feel like the variance that we've been talking about, with wide receiver, with an Odunze, a Malik Nabers. Marvin Harrison's already up there, and he's there to play a snap in the NFL. But, like, value-wise, all have the ability to jump up there. And there's tons of wide receivers in this class that are flooding the NFL and in next year's class with, you know, Tet McMillan and Evan Stewart and Luther Burden. Like, we have a bunch of really, really talented young players in the 2024 and 2025 class coming into the league, while we're going to have some guys aging out. So, like, I'm also curious, because I do think that this is where we saw it with running back, right? Where there's no true, like, running back one. And I know it's because we value that position differently, but there's a changing of the guard at wide receiver, where these young guys have the opportunity to come in and significantly increase their value immediately. And that's that, you know, Puka all the way at wide receiver six. And like you said, you have questions about him. Garrett Wilson's kind of stabilized there. He's, you know, we're still giving him a pass. He's still getting that hope, but this is it. He's getting that DJ Moore treatment right now. He finishes with another wide receiver two season. He's falling. Drake London, prove it year. You got a quarterback finally with a hopefully pass happy offense. Prove it year. Chris Olave is Chris Olave. He's about to take that drop. Whether people believe it or not, Chris Olave is about to just fall into a wide receiver two range. And, like, he's a good player, but again, it's not like that game-changing elite wide receiver. He's not Tyreek Hill. So why not take some shots on some of those guys who can have that upside, who are going to come in valued super high? You know, I haven't seen this many wide receivers come in this high, highly rated in KTC value, or in, you know, ADV really, in a long time.
And maybe that's my hesitation, because to truly get to the range of Amon-Ra St. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, you either have to have a historically good rookie season, or you have to do it for multiple years in a row to prove that you are a three-round pick worthy wide receiver. And that's what, even though it's like these top three is what we're really talking about, because we're in the range of, are we picking quarterback, are we picking wide receiver? The level of hit that you have to have as a wide receiver in year one to jump into that range is massively insane. It's such an outlier, even for prospects as good as this. And that's where I have the hesitation of, like, what if they're just Drake London? Then they just sit into this flat wide receiver two range, and they become the next Garrett Wilson. They become the next Chris Olave. And you know where they're valued at right now? It's already at Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. So if they don't do historical producing rookie seasons, they're not increasing in value. They're just sitting where they are.
It's fair. It's absolutely fair. That's the reason why I wanted to bring it up. Because I, you know, we love quarterbacks and superflex. We absolutely do. But in the end, wide receivers have been the game changers of dynasty lately. And so with the changing of the guard, with the next up and comers, and I know we're looking at specifically those top five picks when we're talking about our top six picks, maybe top seven picks, if, you know, wherever Rome ends up going. There's a lot of really good wide receivers that could be, we're going to see more Pukas. We're going to see more Tank Dells. You know, taking shots on wide receiver in the second and third rounds are going to be more advantageous for the true increase in value. And I think that that's where you're right. At the top of the draft, you take quarterback. Yes, you can take Marvin Harrison because his value is there. In future years, I don't know that we're going to see, you know, wide receivers valued this highly. This year might be what we consider an outlier year when it comes to that wide receiver ranking coming into the league. And it may very well change if some of these guys go to situations where there's other big-time players there already. But let's assume that's not the case. Those three are still locked in. I'd much rather take a whole bunch of darts on second-rounders that end up in a good situation, Tank Dell themselves into a spot, Puka Nacua their way into the top six in dynasty. Because there's the low risk, high reward. You're talking about increasing dynasty value. That's where you take the shots on wide receiver, because the tier for, and this is just, we didn't talk about this, I'm just kind of thinking this through right now. The flat tier of wide receiver is just going to continue to get bigger. With more pass happy offenses, with more wide receivers coming into the league, more three wide sets, more talent, however you want to look at it, with these old guys finally getting aging out. Again, I don't say finally, knock on wood, half my freaking dynasty teams are built around some of those wide receivers. But there's going to be an absolute change where this flat tier just gets bigger. And yes, there's going to be some artificial dynasty value where these guys get skyrocketed, but that's where I'm more willing to take the shots on wide receiver for that increased value, not at the top of the draft. I can still use that Drake May, that Jaden Daniels, that Caleb Williams to either trade or see if they hit. And then if worst case scenario, I can still go get the same quarterback I probably was looking at before. You know, maybe I'm not getting the first on top of it that I want, but I can still go get the guy that's going to produce for me, and someone else can take that gamble for year two.
I can still probably trade out pretty easily if I do see the falling knife and go get Jared Goff. You know, I can still go flip to production whenever I do. And none of this is to say that I'm kind of upset. I wanted you to argue me a little bit more on this, but it's none of it to say that like Marvin Harrison can't go into that range of just absolute elite difference making wide receiver. But whenever you're already taking him there, I just have some concerns about what you have to do to actually stay in value. Or even if you just drop a little bit in value, it's hard to just stay at this range where you're coming in as a wide receiver 5, wide receiver 7, I think is a little bit more realistic in like startups right now. But even still, it's hard to stay within that top 10. We'll see a lot more once we get to landing spots and stuff. And the name of Marvin Harrison will have inherently intrinsic value to where he will probably like almost guaranteed stay within top 20. All of these guys almost will have that guaranteed intrinsic value to stay within the top 20. But where you don't have that, and this is where I actually want to pivot over to the quarterback side of things and do the same exact process that we just did with wide receivers, because I think it's actually a little bit more fragile than most people would like to admit. So if we're going over to the quarterbacks and looking at the quarterbacks and KTC at the very high range, the ones that we think can be quarterback ones year over year over year for next 3 years. And we've done this process before. Going into last year, it felt like we had 8-9 guys who were just locked into that top 12. Yep. What does it look like right now that you're really, really comfortable with? Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, Hurts, Burrow. That's my 5.
Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, Hurts, Burrow.
Nobody else has sticking power. CJ Stroud, you come out and you have a mediocre quarterback 16 year. He'll fall back. He'll fall back to like quarterback 10. I have 5 quarterbacks that I'm really actually securely putting investment value into right now. And what that happens and what that opens up the possibility for is if one of these quarterbacks does hit, imagine one of these quarterbacks, like we just saw it last year, whenever we said there was 8 or 9 locked in quarterbacks that could not be touched. CJ Stroud's now number 3 in KTC. Like we have room for some of these guys to get in. We have room for that upside, highly volatile ability for one of these guys to jump into that range.
Yeah, as I'm looking at it, CJ Stroud, while he had an incredible rookie year, to be QB3, I mean, you're going to do X this next year, right? Like you're going to improve by X this next year in order to cement yourself into this range. I do believe in CJ Stroud. I think that, you know, Slowick sticking around, that offense sticking around, he can still perform very well, still be a very good quarterback. But again, talking about keep trade cut value, talking about dynasty value in communities, CJ Stroud's absolutely a sell. Do I think he's probably QB6 for me? Sure. I'm with you 100% on that top 5. I might even throw in Burrow. Or did you have Burrow? You had Burrow.
Burrow's in it. Yep.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Then yeah, CJ Stroud 6. He's there with Herbert, A. Rich, and then you can put a hodgepodge of it. I mean, honestly, like that's it.
And we're going to see Herbert plummet with this new running game that they're going to have to throw out there. He's going to plummet back down to like T Law range.
It's a conversation for another day.
that it is.
But yeah, so, I mean, like A. Rich, all of these guys, like as you mentioned, we're talking about T Law, Kyler Murray, Jordan Love. There's so many question marks around this tier, quote unquote, that it's a massive gap. I think it's the top five. You give me a tier after that where there's 6 and 7 with Stroud and Herbert. And I know Herbert's going to drop, but for me personally, that's where I'm at. And then there's a big gap for me. I know people believe in Caleb. People believe in A-Rich. I do too. I have hope for some of these guys, Kyler. But that's it for me. That's it. Everyone else is just going to be a hodgepodge of quarterbacks, and we're going to play quarterback the way that you and I love to play.
Especially within best ball. Lineup, not so much. You probably still want to try to get up to the high point of it, but best ball for sure. Definitely love to build through the middle of the floater quarterback range, but lineup still, like, I want to get up into these guys. Like, I really want to try to get up into that top five, the top six range, and really try to cement myself with that held value within those guys. So the last thing that I have, though, to really kind of wrap this whole thing up, go back one more time to whether you should be looking at quarterback or wide receiver at the top of this board within these rookie drafts this coming year. The one thing that we keep going back to, and I keep hearing brought up whenever we do get to that, is more playing the way that we play best ball typically, at least in lineup as well. And that's, hey, you can win if you have a Jordan Love and even if it was Bryce Young, if it was a Brock Purdy and a Jordan Love, like, you could win with those teams last year. And we had a lot of teams win like that because of the attrition that exists at quarterback. And because we've developed this new strategy, and Scott has been the head charger of this strategy, at least in lineup, is putting all of these backup quarterbacks and just using replacement level value to win these leagues. And if you're doing that, I can actually see going the other way. If you've really built out this roster construction so that's the way you want to build, if you've got at least a core of assets built around you to where you can build off of that and then put wide receiver into it, and you want to build your overall roster construction that way, I don't have any problem going with wide receiver. But I think you need to know that going in, and you need to realize that you're missing out on the potential of also going with this way that we've also seen a lot of teams win whenever a lot of the high-end value assets got hurt last year. That heavy two quarterback mode has also really worked very well, especially the shallower the league is.
I feel like this is an outlier year. I said it a little bit earlier, and I know, you know, I agree with you with the common with the mindset when it comes to the quarterback position. But I do think that this is the year where if you wanted to place your bet on Marv, on Neighbors, or if you believe in Odunze, like, if they land in situations, and again, we're doing this pre-draft, like, obviously their keep trade cut value could change significantly based on where they land. And none of that's built into the 2024 class yet, right? You know, there's going to be questions around May or Daniels in whether that's Washington or New England. And then if you get a situation where Marv is in Arizona as the number one, and then Odunze or whomever is, you know, Odunze goes to the Giants and you have Neighbors going to the Chargers, just throwing out top six picks here. Probably not going to happen, but hey, it's possible. So if those are the spots where you have, they are solidified number one wide receivers, and you have questions about the landing spots at quarterback, you can paint yourself the picture where those situations aren't necessarily going to be great for the quarterbacks, but they could be awesome regardless of the situation for wide receiver. And the value, again, we're just looking at the artificial dynasty value, is what we're going to call keep trade cut, because that's what it is. The value of those players for the wide receiver position are going to significantly increase. And that's when I'd be willing to take the shot on them. I think this is the year. Next year, who knows? It could be. I love Tet McMillan. I think he's going to be a superstar. Evan Stewart is going to be great. I mean, like, again, Luther Burden. Those are the top three that I come to mind. But there's still Emeka Buka. There's still a bunch of other names in the 2025 class. So maybe you could take that bet next year too, but they're also not going to have the quarterbacks, I think, that we have this year. So I do think that this is probably the year you can make that bet and take that chance on the wide receiver value more than the quarterbacks. But I don't think it's a mindset change where, like, all of a sudden the entire community is going to start viewing it that way. I do think it could be a very quick reality check if those guys don't end up in good spots, or if there's any sort of target competition. Again, it's situation matters for all of this. So that, I think that context will change for us. But when it comes down to it, I think this is kind of an outlier year where it's like, hey, shoot your shot on who you believe in. And if you think Marv or Neighbors is going to be a top two guy, top three guy, I'm sure a lot of the community does too.
And I fully understand with all the data that we ran through earlier, you're looking at three of the best prospects to come out over this time as well, right? Like, yeah. I fully understand that that's baked in, but I go more by the historical numbers than I will just what is actually presented to me as that prospect profile that's always hyped up in my mind. I'm always going to sit on the pessimistic side of things typically. So I'll sit there and not really lean into it as much. But I think the whole overarching concept of this question of if you want that quarterback, if you want the wide receiver, just ask yourself what you actually want for your team. If you are on that competing side, this is at least how I see it. If you are on that competing, coming out of the rebuild to the middling to running it back side, I think that I do go with the safety and I lean into that wide receiver build there. But if I'm not and I really need to try to elevate my team to the next level, I think I'm still going to lean back in to what historically we've seen as the high variance outcome. And that is still quarterback for me because I believe I can get out at a good enough price. If it doesn't hit the way that I need it to, I can still get out really easily. And I think that we're going to see what you mentioned earlier with the wide receivers, more of just a flattening and a lot of these guys not really hitting a difference making outcome.
Yeah. And so, and again, you know your team, know your league. Because again, it goes back to league context. If it's not active, maybe they trade like crazy for wide receivers, but not for quarterbacks for whatever reason. I mean, we've been in leagues where it's a two QB league and no one values QB at all. And it's like, what just happened here? But again, that kind of context matters. So all of this kind of is adjustable to your league and to your play style. For us, that win now mindset, that win now focus. Yeah, like if I need a quarterback for my team, I'm trading out. I want that proven asset all day, every day, no problem. And maybe if I want to take the shot on the wide receiver, great, because I can trade that asset and flip it into another position player that I'm interested in. It just depends on what I'm trying to do for that team. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting because as I mentioned with the changing of the guard at wide receiver and maybe more of a flat tier, might have to change how we look at the win now strategy. I mean, drafting all these old heads, building out with Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill. It was awesome. It's been a blast. And I still think that there's some years ahead there, but there might be some mind shift or mindset shifts when it comes to that strategy. And maybe it's just tweaking it. You know, you got to constantly adjust, right? You got to adjust the new information.
Definitely is definitely a changing of the new day. I think we're going to see a new version going forward here as we get into especially startup season with the old Overreaction podcast and TFDR here over the next couple of months leading into it. I don't even know exactly what that's going to look like yet, but it's something that we're definitely going to talk about soon, potentially even next week here, whether we have a fully fledged answer or not. I think we just really want to explain why, or at least I want to explain why that there is this change that's happening because it's kind of the scarcity that we talked about earlier. There's a lot that's built into that of we really only have four highly valued wide receiver assets, and they're all like 26 or younger right now. It's an incredibly condensed and consolidated youth movement that's happening within the NFL right now, especially at wide receiver. And we just have more and more of these guys that are coming in as incredible prospects, better prospects each and every year. It feels like that they're coming out. And so there is a little bit of a shift that I think has to happen within the dynasty community, especially within that best ball, specifically what we play a lot, even the lineup going into those high valued quarterbacks that we thought were just locked anchors to fill out our teams on. There's a lot that's going to be shifting around this year, and I'm excited to talk about it through the rest of the offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, you know, dynasty fantasy football in general is a constantly changing game. New information every day, new strategies, new ways to adjust, new ways to build. I mean, it's startup season. So we do want to start talking about, you know, some startup drafts, startup strategies, whether it's auction, doing, you know, most people do snake drafts, you know, figuring out lineup versus best ball. So a lot of fun stuff to get into this offseason. Appreciate you sticking with us through a lot of numbers here. Again, it was a lot of data that we wanted to at least explain out where it all came from, what it looked like, why we are thinking the way we're thinking. So anything else you want to add to this before we wrap out?
Don't think I got anything else. It's going to be a fun offseason. Can't wait to get into an actual startup. I've done a dispersal, but we've got startups coming right around the corner. So that's the season that I'm trying to pivot to now.
Yeah, man, I'm so ready. Seeing all those dispersals for you, you participated in the HVV, you know, Heroes versus Villains for those that aren't in it, 36 team, three copy league, craziness, but you were in that dispersal. Royal Rumble is a 28 team, two copy league. There's a dispersal there. Just seeing those people go through it, I was like, man, I just itching for a startup. I want to do a live auction. You know, there's a lot of fun stuff I want to do. And DD is going to have a bunch of leagues coming out as well. So if you are part of Destination Devi, again, patreon.com/allgas. If you're in that Heisman tier, you can get in these Heisman leagues. Incredible people, sharp industry minds, and just sharp dynasty players as a whole. Lots of fun to compete against what I would consider some of the best dynasty minds there are. So have to be part of it. You definitely tap in there. Again, thank you so much for checking us out here on the Overreaction Podcast.